It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. We're into another week of the 9 till noon show today, 4 minutes past nine, the 17th of June. How are you all keeping? Hope you had a lovely weekend. Hope it went well for you. Of course, it was Father's Day. Belated happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Hope you were spoilt rotten. Big hello to the mums, doubling up. And, of course, a tough day for lots of people who've lost their fathers as well. I mean, we love to see other people happy, of course, but it does remind you of what you once had as well. So it's a mixed bag of emotions, but hopefully the overwhelming emotion yesterday was a positive one. And as I say, there's loads of socks and all that kind of stuff. What do fathers get from Father's Day now? Anyway, is it still socks? I don't be getting socks. No, I've enough socks. But anyway, 0866 25,000. The lines are open. We've loads to talk about the show today. It's a really interesting programme. Caroline's been working very hard over the weekend, as always. But we want to hear what you want to talk about as well. Let us know. You can call the team on 0749 125,000. And if email is your thing, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to send your voice notes into us as well, maybe that's a better way for you to communicate. 0866 25,000 on WhatsApp. It couldn't be any simpler. Also, we're broadcasting live, of course, across YouTube, on your smart TV and your Fire Stick and Facebook. Just search Highland Radio. You should see us there. The papers this morning, the Derry People Donegal News is leading with some political speculation. Efforts to bring Donegal TD Joe McHugh back into Fine Gael ranks have intensified under the new leadership of Taoiseach Simon Harris, who's made direct appeals both before and after his recent ascension to the role. Deputy McHugh, a former minister and government chief whip, lost the Fine Gael party whip over his stance on the defective concrete crisis, but is still being actively courted to return to the party's fold. He took a principled stand during the defective concrete crisis, siding with affected homeowners, demanding more substantial government support. His decision to vote against the party has led to his losing the Fine Gael whip, marking a significant moment in his political career. However, the political landscape is shifting once again. Harris, who succeeded Leo Varadkar as Taoiseach, has made it clear that he values McHugh's experience and commitment to his constituents. In a private conversation, Harris has pushed the importance of unity within Fine Gael, particularly as the party navigates complex challenges ahead of the general election. Obviously, they want me in the fold for the local elections, explained Deputy McHugh. And on he goes, there's an interview in there. I don't see what would be in it for Joe McHugh to return to. I mean, he's drawn a red line, and that red line is still there, so I don't see a pathway back for him, especially considering at this stage, and I'm sure he's working very hard, but emotionally you must be freewheeling to the next general election if you've said that you aren't standing again. The Derry News this morning, a Derry couple have issued an emotional plea for parents to be aware of the dangers of Group B strep. Paul Smith and his partner Alicia suffered a torturous ordeal with their three-month daughter as they almost lost. I'll try reading that again. Paul Smith and his daughter Alicia suffered a torturous ordeal with their three-month daughter as they almost lost a couple of weeks ago. Oh, it's a slight typo there. Strep bacteria is very common in both men and women and is usually harmless but can become a problem in pregnant women, those who are older or already ill, and young babies. On to the Nationals now, starting with the Irish Independent. And medical card holders in need of dental treatment are being left in the lurch more and more, as there are 252 fewer dentists in the scheme compared with last year, leaving just over 800 to service the whole country. And I'm not sure how many there are in this county to service the whole county, but I do know of stories of people travelling great distances to be able to avail of dental treatment using a medical card. But reading on, new figures show the extent of the shortage of dentists available to patients with a medical card, with Galway, Mayo, Roscommon, Cork City, North Dublin, Cavan and Monaghan among the counties and areas facing the biggest fall in the number of scheme practitioners over the past 12 months. So really the question from a local perspective, how difficult is it for you with a medical card to get dental treatment? I mean, speaking to dentists, they have a certain window of opportunity to make money. The money they get from the medical card is far short of what they can get from private patients. They are businesses at the end of the day, aren't they? And I think until that situation is addressed, that that balance is balanced, if you know what I mean, that that difference is balanced. This is a problem that's going to keep going on and on and on. In May last year, patients with a medical card were already highlighting difficulties getting a dentist, with 1,060 in the scheme at the time, but numbers are now down to 808. Nearly every county has seen a fall-off in dentists willing to take medical card patients and an ongoing row over fees and the limited number of treatments dentists can offer. Another thing, another element of that is that the scheme, the government scheme, some dentists would tell you that really is not about the maintenance of teeth. It's effectively to pull a tooth, you know, when someone can't get it seen to or looked after properly using the medical card. Eventually, they just go in, and if they can get an appointment, it's pulled on the medical card. But if you are affected by that story, let us know on the numbers I mentioned a little earlier on. The Irish Times today. President Michael D. Higgins has added his voice to growing concerns around the nature of far-right protests in the Republic, singling out those who target public libraries and their staff in recent years. His remarks, in which he labelled such protesters as vigilantes, followed another protest by a masked anti-migrant group outside the home of Taoiseach Simon Harris on Friday. Now, like, I mean, I watched some of the footage of that, and especially given our history, the visuals of it were very familiar to things that we've seen in the past. I'm all for protest, and I'm all for taking a stand on things that you might feel important. But it's clearly intimidating to land up at someone's house dressed as they were. And also, the guards don't seem to be really doing anything about it. They said their piece, and then the guards asked them to move, and then they moved. Or maybe that's, you see that as legitimate protest, but going at someone's house heading into the weekend, dressed in masks that you probably marched on the streets to not have to wear during COVID, is a bit strange. In an address at the annual Bloomsday Garden Party at Aras an Uachtaráin yesterday, Mr. Higgins said the protection of public libraries and their staff from attacks by the far right should be regarded as a priority for everyone in a civilised society and not just a job for An Garda Síochána. But there is not a huge amount of people that are targeting the libraries, but they are into a new cycle now, at least a couple of the main faces in it, and they're switching tact onto more of a pro-life anti-abortion platform. So maybe they've moved on naturally from the libraries. The Irish Daily Mail, Fianna Fáil is privately moving to ditch the Greens in favour of an arrangement with Labour following the local and European elections. At last week's parliamentary party meeting, TDs and senators were told to encourage councillors to, wherever possible, to do a deal with Labour when it comes to council positions. One source said it was put very subtly to Micheál Martin. Senior politicians are reluctant to be seen to tell councillors what to do, but the message was clear from Micheál: build relationships with Labour. And the truth is, and we were discussing this during the course of a local election coverage, I mean, the bottom line is no matter how desperate you are, I think any party is going to look for alternatives to the Greens. There was a Green wave where the Greens seen councillors elected, where the Green Party had MEPs, TDs and what have you. Obviously, to some extent, much of that now has, that tide has regressed. And I just don't think that, and this is no offence to the Greens, that they will be used to form a government in the near future, because they are seen as somewhat toxic. And some of the big issues of today, the Green fingerprints are all over it. Now, you know, you stick by your mates, don't you? But the Greens being thrown under the electric bus there, no doubt about it. The Irish Daily Star today, the horse slaughterhouse at the centre of an investigation into allegations of animal abuse and cruelty has been fully suspended, the Department of Agriculture confirmed. The country's only licensed equine abattoir, operated by Shannonside Foods in County Kildare, was probed by the RTE Investigates programme Horses Making a Killing, which led to footage being captured of horses being allegedly beaten and mistreated. Illegal activities to launder the identities of horses and compromise the integrity of the human food chain were also uncovered at a site connected to the abattoir for horses. Fair play to RTE and the RTE Investigates team for exposing this, but you would wonder about the oversight and inspections and the inspection regime, weren't you? I mean, we're not talking about there's 50 and this one seemingly slipped through the net. It's the only place. And as I say, where's the oversight? Where, up until now, like, how many instances of alleged cruelty have there been before RTE decided to stick the cameras in there? If you watch that, we're going to be talking about that a little later on. And we want you to have your say, of course, using the usual using the usual lines of communication. Ukraine would hold peace talks within hours if Russian troops pull out, President Volodymyr Zelensky has said. But he warned world leaders at a summit for Ukraine in Switzerland that Vladimir Putin will not end the invasion and must be stopped in any way we can, in inverted commas. More than 80 countries have signed the document blaming Moscow for the war, backing Ukraine's right to defend its borders. However, India, South Africa and Saudi Arabia did not sign. China weren't there and Russia weren't invited. So China backed Russia. China didn't go because the Russians weren't invited. Just ahead of that, Vladimir Putin, he said that there are conditions for peace and the areas that the Russians control or partly control in the east of Ukraine, he says the Ukrainians, if they back out of there, there can be an immediate ceasefire. Ukraine and the West effectively through Ukraine are saying that no, Russia has to pull completely out of Ukraine and then we can talk about peace. The bottom line is though, no one's looking for a solution for this. I'm not a diplomat. But there has to be a way whereby that, surely, and I'm saying this in the context of the amount of people, and particularly young people that are dying on both sides, could they not come up with a peace process along the lines of those areas, those contested areas that they're left in abeyance for time being and some sort of a referendum in 5 or 10 years to so the people themselves could determine whether they want to be part of Russia or Ukraine. Something like that's going to happen because Russia ain't backing out and the West ain't backing down to Russia. And all the while, there's this massive loss of life. They need to call a ceasefire and let the people in time determine what to do with that. I don't know. But I would like to see someone try and come up with a plan rather than it just going on and on and on. And all the while, the chess pieces are being moved around the world. Russia is moving some of its submarines closer to the United States. The, you know, the United States are moving some of its nuclear submarines elsewhere. And, you know, there comes a point, a tipping point, and I wonder how far away we are from it. Finally, in the mirror, children are experimenting with everything that can be sniffed, snorted or swallowed. Experienced drug counsellor Mary Byrne of MB Now International said the amount of drug abused by kids and teenagers is probably the worst she's ever seen in her 30 years of working. Ms. Byrne said, 20 years ago, people were shocked when I talked about children as young as 12 years old taking cannabis at the school gates. Now, most young people see cannabis as hash or nothing. So in other words, they see it as no biggie. Marie, based in Navan, said many young teenagers are using vaping to heat up cannabis. Cannabis solvents and alcohol are still the gateway drugs, but I've dealt with teenagers as young as 14 who are now cocaine addicts. And I suppose if you're a young teen and you are vaping and you're addicted to that nicotine, and then you see lots of people advocating for the legality of cannabis or people saying it's really safe and all that kind of stuff, is it a great leap then to sort of start vaping cannabis? Probably not, unfortunately. Okay, that was a run through the newspapers on this Monday morning. Okay, so let's go back to that RT Investigates show last week. The Department of Agriculture, as I mentioned, has confirmed that it's fully suspended the operation of the Shannonside Foods plant in County Kildare. Serious animal welfare abuses and cruelty have been uncovered in the treatment of horses being sent for slaughter at Ireland's only licensed equine abattoir. And I think the fact that it's Ireland's only one is quite a significant element to this story and this type of activity going on there. Aideen Ural of the Irish Council Against Blood Sports Good morning, Aideen.
Good morning, Greg.
Go ahead, Aideen, yes?
No, I'd like to commend the RT Investigates team for uncovering this broadcasting a great programme which showed the dreadful secrets going on there inside racing. They did the same with the greyhounds running for their lives 5 years ago, and the greyhound and horse racing industry are quite alike in that, you know, animals are being exploited, overbred, and then discarded when no longer useful or fit for purpose or surplus to requirements. It's a callous industry. Both of these industries are quite callous.
And there's a lot going on here because obviously there is the cruelty element to this, but also there is the potential impact on the integrity of the human food chain. But for those who did not see the programme, Aideen, what was uncovered here? What was going on?
Oh, it was a very hard watch, Greg. I mean, it was a difficult to watch it. I mean, what we saw in that slaughterhouse was, in the film footage, was the beating of horses, terrified horses, by guys with long plastic piping. And then one guy prodding a horse with a pitchfork, a horse that was dying. He was prodding it to get up. And another horse was kicked as it lay dying. And there were other horses on that premises, outside in fields, which were lame horses, in really bad condition. And I can't understand how the Department of Agriculture could let that kind of thing go on. I mean, clearly horses were there in bad conditions anyway. I mean, they may not have seen what was going on inside that particular shed, but they must have seen the state of the other horses in the premises. It was just a nightmare scenario, a complete hellhole, and it has now been closed down. And thank God for that, and I hope it never opens again, never.
Before we talk about sort of the oversight and the gaps that clearly must have been there, these people that work there obviously don't see these horses as animals or anything, just see them as almost like inanimate objects in how they treat them. There's no respect at all. Listen, you know, I mean, there's an awful lot we could talk about how we raise animals and then we kill them and then we eat them or whatever, right? That's maybe a conversation for another day. But farmers, for the most part, there is a respect there and an understanding. In this situation, they were bags of spuds or nothing. That's how they must have been viewed.
Nothing. And that's what they are to the owners and trainers as well. When they're no longer winning on the track, or if they're surplus to requirements and don't make the grade, that's where they end up. I mean, they're just discarded like rubbish. And 8,000 foals are born annually every year around that, and a lot of them don't make the grade. What happens to them? They're just discarded as well. And we saw on the film too that lots of horses are sent abroad, as you mentioned, for the meat trade, which is just appalling. I mean, it's a dreadful situation.
And of course, the Department of Agriculture's hands are all over this as well, in that, you know, I mean, the horse racing industry is very heavily subsidised. I think the last figures I saw were 23, 25 million. That money effectively goes into prize money, which is then won by multi-millionaires who make a killing off the back of this industry. And then then we see the commodity, which it's all they must see at, these animals, how they're treated. So the amount of money being made off the back of these horses, literally, but also the cruelty of these horses is shocking, really.
Yeah, and it's 76 million they got this year, the horse racing industry. I mean, that's an absolute travesty that they're pouring money into that abusive industry that sees thousands of innocent horses ending up in slaughterhouses to be treated like that. And can I just say, I cannot believe that the department would license an individual who we discovered in the programme had convictions for animal cruelty. It's incredible that the department allowed that person to run that slaughterhouse. The license, once that person was convicted of animal cruelty, the license should have been taken off him. It's outrageous. It shows the disrespect they have for animals.
The thing about it as well, too, which jumps out at me, is that if we had, say, 50 of these, you know, and you have a bad egg, and, you know, in the inspection and oversight process, it was missed, that would be bad enough. But there's literally, you know, one show in town and it is this. It does make you wonder, because as you say, right, maybe you wouldn't witness the beatings or the pitchfork instances on any given day, but the broader way the operation is run, you know, what happens to horses, how are horses declared dead here and exported alive, you know, that's the type of stuff any, even soft-touch regulation should pick up.
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredible the sort of skullduggery that was going on and chips being inserted, extra chips. I mean, it's unbelievable that the department wasn't keeping control over that and monitoring that closely. And it's just unbelievable. And then handing out 76 million to an industry that, you know, is doing that kind of, well, that sort of thing is going on in.
It's a funny old industry, horse racing. If you just hold that thought. No, just you go ahead and just say what you just want to say and then I'll come back to you.
I want to talk about horse racing itself and what goes on. I mean, it's incredible that jockeys are allowed to beat horses with whips in this day and age. Beating an animal is a crime. And yet these guys are able to do it with impunity. Why? I don't understand. I did report whipping of horses to the Gardaí on occasions. And you just don't get you get no response. I mean, it is a crime. It is an offence. Why can they do it? But you couldn't do that to a dog or any other animal. You couldn't go around with a whip and start whipping it inside.
I presume you're on to G on the horse as he approached the finishing line. That's the whipping you're talking of.
I don't. Yeah, but it's very, and it's sometimes you watch them and it's really vigorous and savage what they're doing. And a blind eye is turned by everybody to that.
Yeah, but we kind of all do turn a blind eye to it, Dean, because really, look at horse racing. What is horse racing? Horse racing is, for the most part, a lot of the times, race meetings that are very poorly attended. You know, obviously, you have your big festivals where lots of people come out. Not as many Irish travelled over to Aintree this year as they have in the past. And really, what it is supporting is gambling. So you've got people. That is really what's at the heart of it. So in terms of a spectacle sport, it's obviously not all that, because, as I say, there are key figures in there's key dates in the diary where huge crowds turns up. For the most part, the 7:30 in Sligo, there could be one man and his dog watching that, and it's heavily subsidised by the taxpayer here, and really what comes from it is an awful lot of heartbreak. Through gambling. They need to have a dog or horse race going 24 hours a day. 24 hours
Absolutely.
A day. And there's probably some... And you know what? In a way, it might help some places not too far from here, right? But it doesn't matter if anyone attends sometimes. They just have to have a horse or a dog race going live 24 hours a day. And it's not because people are standing watching them. It's because people need something to bet on.
Absolutely, they have a symbiotic relationship, horse racing and gambling. That's what it is. We can't have one without the other. And the same for greyhound racing. I mean, in fact, mentioning greyhound racing, all this was aired about greyhound racing by the same RTE Investigates team in 2019. And it was all about overbreeding, discarding dogs when they're no longer fit to run on the track. The same thing. We saw a greyhound being shot in the head and then dumped into a rubbish bin.
But if I put it to you that it generates a lot of income, tourism, employment, supports, you know, local businesses, local communities, I presume that argument would fall on deaf ears.
Well, it would in my case because, I mean, you know, what price animal cruelty, it's not justified at all in any way, shape or form. I mean, there are other things people can be doing, other sports. I mean, there's football, there's all sorts of other sports. And they don't, this doesn't, the exploitation of animals is unacceptable in this day and age. But unfortunately, Ireland has a very bad record in animal cruelty. We still have hare coursing here and fox hunting. The government continues to turn a blind eye and allow it, even though the vast majority of people want it banned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the first thing they should do is take the 76 million off them, or take these subsidies. Stop subsidising cruelty, because that's what they're doing.
Okay, Aideen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Aideen Ural of the Irish Council Against Blood Sports. I'm very interested in listening to the views of you out there, the counterpoints of you. I'm not a massive horse racing fan. I'm not a massive... in fact, I used to watch the Grand National back in the day with my dad and that, but to be honest with you, I don't really enjoy watching it now. I don't see the point of it. But I respect other people's points of view as well. So maybe, you know, that wasn't the most robust of interviews to offer the other side of it with Aideen. It's just I don't really have the arguments because I don't see a great deal of point in it. But maybe you out there do. So let me know, 086 60 25,000. Of course, there is the show and what it showed, but also is the wider conversation about horse and greyhound racing. Do you see the benefits in it? What are the benefits of it? And so on and so forth. As a horse owner, I watched RTE, the RTE show. It was one of the most disturbing investigations by our fantastic RTE journalists. Well done to all. Hope the government and powers to be will put a stop to this cruelty. I'm still in shock that came in from Ray. RTE investigates, goes deep inside the equine industry to show what happens to horses after they leave the spotlight. Indeed, we need to take those people who were involved in this disgusting alleged abuse of horses and make them walk down the street, and people can flog them with rubber rods. I understand where you're coming from. I'm an eye for an eye leaves the world blind, but I take your point. Truly horrific. What is the government and Charlie McConnell doing about it? Well, he shut the place down and investigations have been launched and reassured us that in the last 3 weeks, there's no horse meat that's entered the human food chain. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to talk about a really serious dog attack that took place across the Greenway in Ashone. A man particularly savagely... assaulted by a dog. We're going to talk about that after these. Now, Gardaí have confirmed to us, Gardaí and Muff that is, that they are investigating a dog attack which took place in Muff, the Muff area, on Sunday. A man aged in his 20s received medical attention. His injuries are not life-threatening, but I've seen an image of his injuries and I can tell you they are absolutely brutal. Councillor Terry Crossan joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Terry.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Terry. How did you learn of this dog attack?
Yeah, right. I was made aware of this yesterday afternoon, where a friend of the injured party rang me to make me aware of it. And when he described the dog and he described the general area it happened in, I would know the dog. I would know the individual who owns it. They take very good care of their dog, are out every day, morning, noon and night, exercising the dog. And this dog is always kept under control, always on a lead. But when I heard of the incident, and then subsequently I saw an image of the injuries that had been caused, the person told me that he had been trying to contact the dog warden. Dog warden obviously wasn't available. I advised him to contact Gardaí to make a complaint. Gardaí, to be fair, you know, are extremely busy. They weren't aware of the gravity of the injuries, so they weren't really taking it, you know, overly seriously until I rang the Garda Barracks and told them, look, this is a very serious incident. This needs immediate attention and needs immediate action. And to be fair, the Garda acted on it straight away after I sent them an image of his injuries. So that's underhand. Now there is moves being made to address the situation. I really don't want to say too much as the investigation is ongoing. It could could end up in court. So, as I say, I don't want to jeopardise anything like that.
Okay, you said this dog. What do you know? What type of dog it is?
Yeah, it's a large Rottweiler dog.
So how was right? How would a Rottweiler dog be able to do this kind of damage through a muzzle?
Well, it didn't have a muzzle.
You said at the very beginning. You said at the very beginning that this dog is always under control.
Yeah, it's under control, but it's not muzzled. It doesn't necessarily have, you know. I don't know what the legal requirements are.
It has to have a
They're
muzzle.
Very vague.
Yeah, it has to have, it's not vague at all.
It's a big dog. Mm. It may be in the category of a dangerous dog. So if it is in that category, it should have a
That's quite
muzzle
correct,
and
indeed.
Should definitely be always on a lead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Just to clarify that. Now, I saw the injury. I didn't want to look at it, but I thought it important to look at it. And it is
absolutely, and that's
horrendous.
What prompted me to contact the Gardaí and urge them to give this incident the highest priority in addressing it. Yeah,
This is not the first dangerous dogs incident. I was reading dangerous dogs. Just want to say this. This is not this obviously is an attack on a human. A very, very serious attack, looking at that image. And that's very near a very, very important vein that runs up the thigh. We could be talking about something very different today. But there have been other instances involving dogs, generally speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was another incident in my own area over the last bank holiday weekend when two dogs were at large and got into a property and killed three wee pet lambs that somebody's grandchildren had been looking after and feeding every day. The dogs got out, they got into the paddock and killed them. And the problem was, it happened over a bank holiday weekend. There was no availability of a dog warden. A dog warden is only available every day from 10:30 until 1:30 every day, Monday to Saturday. Not available at weekends, not available over bank holidays, and not available in an emergency. Yesterday's incident was very much an emergency, and we need a designated line that we can contact dog wardens in the case of a serious incident.
And that's your principal call today, isn't it? Obviously, reacting to the news, and we appreciate your accepting
absolutely.
The invite. You want
a
full-time dog warden
is,
that can be contacted at any time.
Yes, we need an emergency line. I mean, who knows what time a dog is going to be out of control, attack someone, causing an injury. So therefore, there must be a designated line that we, as members of the public, can contact the dog warden to have these issues addressed.
Yeah, and just to be clear, as I say, I don't know the instance surrounding this case or not, but owners of dangerous dogs will receive on-the-spot fines of €300 if their pets are not muzzled under new laws. This includes fining the owners of dogs who attack sheep. The current list includes American Pit Bull Terriers, Rottweilers, Staffordshire Bull Terriers, and Doberman Pinschers, amongst others. XL American Bully Dogs are to be added to that. So, as I say, I can't speak to this particular incident.
People,
the situation is ongoing.
And I am a dog owner myself. I love dogs, but owners need to take responsibility. If you have a dog that is in a particular category, you need to make sure that all the criteria for looking after those dogs, keeping those dogs under control properly, is applied. And that needs to be done. And we have to reinforce those restrictions from here on in. Because had that been a child who was attacked on that greenway yesterday, there would have been catastrophic outcomes.
Well, just to back that point up, this man who obviously runs quite a lot and there's a lot of muscle in the thigh area has been left with a gaping wound in his thigh. If that was a child's throat or something, there is no doubt what would have happened. Dogs, certainly of dogs of a certain category, I don't know what the case was in this case, it's not for me to comment, should be on a lead, a short lead, by the way, not a long lead, not one of those ones that expands. And they should have a muzzle on. As I say, that's generally speaking.
The Greenway is a great asset to our area, to our whole community, and the number of people on it every day is absolutely unbelievable. From all ages, old, young, on bicycles or whatever, and people walking dogs properly under control. But, you know, everybody must be responsible. And if you have a large dog that could be unpredictable, if he falls into a specific category, the criteria has to be applied and that dog has to be properly controlled either by... Well, obviously, all dogs should be on a lead, but if it's in that category, it should be muzzled.
No, it has to be muzzled. It is the law. I'll just reiterate it again. The Control of Dogs Regulations 1998. These dogs listed need to be muzzled in public. These dogs listed must be on a short lead less than 2 metres. The leash must be sufficiently strong or it needs to be a chain. And as I say, the restricted dog breeds are American Pit Bull Terrier, English Bull Terrier, Bull Mastiff, Doberman Pinscher, Rottweiler, German Shepherd stroke Alsatian, the Rhodesian Ridgeback, Japanese Akita, Japanese... Anyway, all the I don't need to go through them all. All the regulations are there. So we shall see. But your principal call here is that you ring the guards, they say you need to ring the dog warden, but we don't have a dog warden on duty all of the time to call in cases of an emergency.
Yes, absolutely, Greg. Okay. And it's something that I'm going to be addressing. It's something I'm going to take on board, and we need greater clarification on their availability. We need an emergency number where they can be called at any hour and issues addressed.
Thanks very much for that. That's Councillor Terry Crossan there. 086 60 25,000. We may be speaking to the victim of that attack later on in the programme. No? Okay. Obviously, they're focusing on getting medical attention this morning, but we have been in contact with them. A harrowing experience, and the image of the injury is too gruesome, actually, to even display at this point. And also, too, the person who is the victim at this point does not want that shared publicly. OK, back with more shortly. Councillor Martin McDermott is the chair of the Defectives Block Committee with Donegal County Council, and he joins us now. Good morning, Martin. Thanks for your time today.
Morning, Greg.
I suppose what we're starting to see now is research and studies sort of backing up what we knew or we believed to be inevitable. And weekend reports tell us that homes in at least 16 counties have been affected by defective concrete as new research questioned the future of a European certification and safety standard for building materials. So what was your takeaway from these reports?
Yeah, well, firstly, I suppose, Greg, Petrolab, who are a company that have done a lot of the research here in Donegal, though to be a company that have put together a vast majority of the reports that we have seen from the houses here, and they are doing quite a bit of research at the minute on other counties around the country. They are saying now that there is defective materials in 16 different counties. Some of those counties, I suppose, have been taking materials from counties that are close by to them, so they mightn't just actually be within those counties. But it certainly, you know, we're in a position where it's never been more important that the National Standards Authority, that they get this IS 465 updated to a level where we know exactly what the parameters are in relation to Mica, what the parameters are in relation to pyrite and all the deleterious materials, so that, you know, when engineers are making recommendations on homes, that those recommendations are the right recommendations that those recommendations are ones that can be stood over for the next 40 years. And I think that's the vital thing and the vital bit of information that has to be put together. And that needs to happen really quickly, as you see. With that report, there are bigger elements all around the country now that will tie into this. So that needs to be prioritised.
Do you think many houses with defective concrete, with the likes of pyrotite and other chemicals, are being missed because of our testing regime? That's a question I haven't really been able to get an answer to. Do you know? So, in other words, are there homes that are deteriorating and are crumbling? Maybe not to the extent where it's blatantly obvious, but are being missed due to our current testing process?
Yeah, well, the testing process that is done by the likes of the petrol labs and by the geologists that are working for those companies, the tests and the reports that are sent back to the professionals would stipulate, you know, what deleterious materials are there. I suppose the problem that we have is that the standard in which those reports are sort of looked at from, and the standard that we have here to determine what remediation option the house has to get, that's where the problem lies mm-hmm. at the minute. That standard hasn't been updated, as you know, since it was put together in 2017.
So can you give us a real-world example of that then? So, in other words, our standard versus what's coming back from Petrolab, in the absence of it being updated, what is a real-world scenario that's happening that shouldn't be happening then?
Well, you could have a situation, Greg, where a house you know, would get a remediation option instead of a full demolish, you know, because of high levels of deleterious materials that we don't actually know at the minute as to what the levels are that, you know, could cause future deterioration to that house. So, you know, there are issues there. As a local authority, you know, going back to 2022, we wrote to the department before Christmas that year and clearly, you know, said to the department that we had major issues with what was coming into the local authority in relation to the Petrolab reports. You might remember it took about 9 months then to get an answer back as to what we could do with that, and that we were allowed then to take deleterious materials into consideration. But again, that's just to take it into consideration. There is no actual update to the standard to allow professionals that are making these decisions to make them with a standard that's there, because the standard, as I said, is 5 or 6 years old now at this stage.
And what is at what stage of the process of updating that standard are we at?
Well, there has been a lot of work done by the National Standard Authority to date and the department. The last conversation that we had with them as a council, they said that late 2024, early 2025, and it was asked at some of the Oireachtas committee meetings as well by some of the politicians asked the National Standards Authority when they would have their report done. Now, they did say at that some of their timelines, late 2024, early 2025, before they would have a report back to update that standard. So we're probably looking at another 6 months, Greg, if we're to be honest, before we have anything in relation to when the standard will be updated.
The lag confuses me somewhat, because this is all homeowner driven in terms of identifying it initially as a Donegal problem, having to campaign for that to be recognised, for responsibility to be accepted and for a scheme to be put in place. Then it was homeowners again that are saying, right, it's not just here, it's down the West Coast. And now we've got those affected again driving this. Europe, the penny seems to have dropped there. Obviously the homeowners know. And now, because of their hard work and the campaigners' hard work, we're starting to find out how extensive this problem is. Why do you think there is such a lag from government in not saying, we've uncovered this, we're taking a lead on it? It confuses me, given the absolute scale of this crisis. This has turned from a terrible large wave to a tsunami across the country. And yet it's still talked of as if we recognise the problem and we've put a solution in there onto the next thing. It's mind-boggling to me. I don't know what your reaction to it is.
Yeah, look, certainly, Greg. I mean, this is not just a legal problem, as everybody knows now. It's a it's a countrywide problem. And, you know, I do feel that the length of time that it's taken to update that standard, because we go back again, as I said, to 2022. If we can go back to 2020, when the scheme was announced in June 2020, by December of 2020, senior engineers within the council have wrote to the department as well, through our own defective concrete block committee. We wrote to the department with issues and with, you know, saying that the reports that were coming in back even as far as 2020 were showing different deleterious materials, different to the standards that was there in relation to freeze thaw. So, you know, there's been quite a lot of years have gone past here where we should have, you know, that standard should have been updated long before now, to be fair, but it hadn't. And we are keeping the pressure on to get that done. I suppose it does take a bit of time to get that done, but, you know, it is the one element of this whole scheme and this whole, you know, not just in Donegal, but for the whole country, that will have a major effect on how things move forward. And I think that's the one that, that needs to be delivered on urgently.
And the housing market itself. I mean, if we get to a stage where every property that is being sold, and this is very familiar to people in Donegal, that every property that's being sold across the country is tested, you know, that could be the next big issue, that the house prices could begin to collapse. Who's to say? I don't know. But the ramifications could be huge.
We have that same situation with our own council stock. We have the same situation with people that want to buy homes here in this county, where the standard again has an influence on how and what people can buy.
Yeah.
And that has a big knock-on effect for people, for particularly younger people that want to buy a house to start a family. That has a big knock-on effect.
For sure. Councillor Martin McDermott, thanks for your time. He's chair of the Defective Blocks Committee with Donegal County Council. We're going to be speaking GEAA with our good friend Brendan Devaney a little later on, by the way. So if you have any comments or questions about the weekend's action, feel free to get in touch with us now and we'll put those to Brendan. But we're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices.